Happy almost weekend, y'all. We've got a treat for you today on CityCast Las Vegas because I'm here with my co-host David Figler and contributor Michael Lyle. And we're talking about the massive tax credit that could make Vegas the next Hollywood, a fishy new poll about support for the A's, and facial recognition at the Las Vegas airport. It's Friday, May 19th. I'm Vogue Robinson, and here's what Las Vegas is talking about.
Yeah. Nailed it.
Just like that. Note for note.
Good morning, Michael and David. How are y'all doing?
Good morning.
I'm looking forward to treats.
Definitely.
Treats to my door.
We are the treats.
And they're, what's the candy? First they're sweet, then they're sour. Sour Patch Kids. These are Sour Patch Kid sweets.
Yay.
So let's start with the first one. Michael, they're saying, oh, Vegas could become the next Hollywood. And the comparisons always make me a little sick to my stomach. But can you tell us why people are saying that?
Yes. So this week at the legislature, they dropped a bill that would give, over the next 20 years, almost a $5 billion tax subsidy to film industries, including Sony. Yes, that Sony, to have them move here to, you know, become the next Hollywood, if that's what they want to do. I recommend you reading April Corbin Gurness's reporting on that. But yeah, that's the gist of it. They're looking at giving a massive tax subsidy to film studios to incentivize them to move here and set up studio here, which is getting a lot of support from lawmakers and union leaders alike, and then pushback from progressive groups and even libertarian groups. They're kind of coming together and being like, nope, this is not for us.
Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, it's a massive tax credit, but like compared to, say, the deal the A's are asking for, it's not like the money is coming out of like our pockets. It's money that isn't going in. So do you think we would notice the difference?
So Nevada would offer approximately $190 million in transferable tax credits annually for the next two decades. Transferable tax credits are very hard to explain. I would actually recommend you checking out Hugh Jackson, the editor of Nevada Current. He has an analysis out on this, and he writes, an example that I used before, if a casino or insurance company, two industries the film bill declares eligible to purchase the tax credits, buys $50 million worth of state-issued tax credits for $37.5 million, the state will then accept the credit against $50 million of gaming or insurance company's tax bill, effectively granting the company $12.5 million tax break.
So it's basically a tax break. They're giving them a discount on their taxes, which would otherwise go to us.
But it's a subsidy that makes them richer, and we get no revenue out of that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the state would be taking in no revenue, but a film company already worth billions of dollars would be getting richer.
Yeah, so it's basically deferring or forfeiting money that we would otherwise get if they were a normal business that didn't have this transferable tax credit program in place. And we see this all the time, like the monorail, when they were being built, they would normally have to pay property taxes for the, you know, the physical space that they were using. And then they got this sort of tax credit or something along those lines. So it really is an ethereal loss of revenue for someone who may or may not be in our community. I think that's kind of where it falls down. So we're saying we want you here and we want what you're doing so much that you're not going to have to pay the same taxes that other people would have to pay. I think that's the most basic way to describe it.
Hmm. So us not taking that money in, okay, so we're just giving up revenue to attract filmmakers to come here and create their films. So what do y'all think is like the main benefit, since we're not getting the regular straightforward money from the larger companies? What kind of revenue do you think we'll be able to generate as a result of more films being made here in Vegas?
They have offered some job projections on this, whether it's 10,000 construction jobs and 10,000 indirect jobs. However, job projections have always been overinflated. We saw that with the Allegiant Stadium, them projecting so much and them not even using a quarter of what those projections are, or around a quarter of what those projections are. Job projections are always an idea, an aspirational, a selling point that never really materialized to what they could be. So that's one of the sticking points of this. And another thing they're saying is, hey, we have all films filmed here, all these films with Vegas logos and signs, that's going to boost tourism. You know what Nevada already does really good?
Tourism.
So that's not their selling point.
And not all those movies make Las Vegas look particularly good. Let's be real about that. It's not like we would also get...
Hey, respect for Con Air.
It's not like, well, it's not like we would get editorial control over the messaging about Las Vegas in said films.
That is very true.
I'm going to say, on the other side, though, there is a legitimate argument that Las Vegas and Nevada, in broader sense, is a good place for filmmaking. Big, wide open spaces, interesting buildings, things of that nature. And there are a lot of folks that are involved in the support industry that are already in the state, people who do lighting and rigging and all the sort of support things. And they would get, obviously, an influx of business if this did lure those companies to come here. So in that respect, it is a viable idea that revenues would be generated based on film work that happens in Las Vegas, and a lot of that would go to people who are already here. My big concern, guys, is like, are you just bringing out of state folks to kind of capture that sort of business too? In other words, is this legislation considering, you know, giving a benefit to Nevadans first?
One thing was talked about, the fact that we do have a UNLV film school, and it doesn't, there are not a lot of avenues for those students to actually go practice their craft. So this could be a benefit for them. And I totally understand that. And you know, I love the idea of, I'm a cinephile, especially horror movies. Get me going. I love a good horror movie. I love going to the movies. I would be down with a film company coming here. They could do whatever they want. What I have questions about is, why do we give $1 billion subsidies to companies that are already worth $1 billion to come here and set up? If they want to come here and set up, welcome, come to Nevada. But why should we as taxpayers be on the line for that? And why should our lawmakers be entertaining this idea to give them more subsidies to attract them here? They can just come here. Nothing is stopping them from coming here. They're billion-dollar companies.
I mean, why don't you think they're coming here, Vogue, already?
I mean, I'm sure they don't know how to manage. I'm sure they don't know how to, like, operate in our city, and I think they have to think about it. I think also, if there's already a hub, a.k.a. L.A., Hollywood area, that's already an area that's set up that meets their needs. Also, I feel like what I've seen a lot of is like the end of a bunch of the shows that I enjoy are in Georgia. And I feel like Georgia also did something really similar where they provided those types of tax credits. And that was the incentive to bring the business there. I think it's a typical thing for Nevada. And I know that a lot of people love coming here because of other things about the way that our taxes are done, the cost of our properties. When I talk to people about the square footage of my home versus the square footage of their home and the prices, the difference in price that we pay, I think it makes it worthwhile and lucrative to move your business here. So with film, I just think, depending on like how it looks, I don't know what makes certain things very like distinctively Vegas or distinctively Nevada, depending on what you want to film. So I guess my question for y'all is, like, what movie, like classic or recent, do you think would have looked better if they would have shot it in Clark County?
Oh, that's hilarious.
Oh, I got mine. I was thinking this morning, I was like, oh, those Babysitter movies and maybe Dumb and Dumber and maybe Bring It On, because that college experience and like...
Interesting.
So those are my three that I'm trying to think about, but that are decentralized from the Strip, though. So what do y'all think?
I want to see more horror movies here. We've seen a couple zombie movies. There was a Paranormal Activity set in Henderson. There was a Fright Night remake that was set kind of in Henderson that used Vegas as the backdrop, because it makes sense to have like vampires living here. I want to see like slashers. I want to see like almost like a Five Nights at Freddy's, but at Circus.
Yes. Ooh. Yes.
Although
the rural is like Boulder City.
But again, I don't want to subsidize this as a taxpayer. Like, come and film that and do that here, but like on your dime.
David, what's your take?
I personally, I want to see Paul Blart 3 because that was the last big film that came from this tax credit push. So this tax credit thing is not like brand new. We've done it before. This is really upping it to like a larger extent. So the last time that this kind of came through, the big film that came was Paul Blart Mall Cop 2, which was filmed over at the Wynn. And I love talking about that film. There's actually a podcast that's devoted to that film, and it runs every year. They do another analysis of the movie because it's worth it. It absolutely is worth it. It is one of the most definitive Las Vegas films ever.
David, I hate it.
There's a lot about the Paul Blart 2 film that explains a lot about both Vegas, filmmaking in the modern era, and this whole tax credit idea. So I'm going to suggest that those film students over at UNLV study the broader implications of the Paul Blart series.
Mm-hmm. And that's David's sermon for today.
And it's David's soapbox.
Well, good thing they dropped it out in the last 3 weeks of the legislative session, so we have tons of time to discuss this.
Yeah, I mean, that's another topic altogether is why did Senator Roberta Lange keep this so hidden for so long when it is so big?
That's the question. Let's talk about other big things that are coming.
More money giveaways.
Yes, you get some shmoney to come to Vegas, and you get some shmoney to come to Vegas. Supposedly, 2/3 of the people support the A's ballpark. Please explain, David, because that doesn't sound accurate to me.
So it's part of the publicity drive, and this is standard issue way to gin up support in the legislature is to start with all sorts of bright and sunny interviews about how great it's going to be. And then they back it up with polling. And then I'm sure right around the corner, Jeremy Aguero is going to tell us how many jobs in economic benefit is going to come through his asterisk-driven economic analysis that seems to accompany every project that wants to come to Las Vegas and do these sorts of things. So bottom line, the Melman Group, which is a reputable polling company out of D.C. They've done a lot of work in Nevada elections over the years, were hired by the A's to poll people in Clark County. They say they found 700 Clark County voters, and they put out a press release that said the analysis of that data suggests that 2/3 of those Clark County voters polled by their text phones to answer a bunch of questions via text support the A's ballpark. There's a lot of caveats to this, Vogue, and there's been some pushback and some criticism of the polling that was done. Foremost is that it didn't straight up or clearly explain or poll the public financing concept that's around it. Now, the A's are denying that they're looking for public financing per se. They're sort of trying to twist the language around, but ultimately I think we could all agree it's public financing that they're seeking to the tune of about $500 million to build their private stadium.
I want to know how it's phrased because like sometimes in these polls, things are ridiculously written or are confusingly written. And so I'm just curious what the polling questions were. And so if I were going to report on a poll like this, I think I would take a look at the actual poll itself to see what questions people were asked.
I could give you some insights on that. I think that Vogue's going to say that this is all shady. I mean, the questions are like, do you support the components of it, right? Do you like a retractable roof? Do you like it that it would generate $500 million in income for small businesses and things like that? I mean, you know,
can you find me the public funding question on that poll? That's what I would love to hear.
Let's look at it this way. They're claiming that they gave the best argument for the opposition and the best argument for its support before they started the poll, right? Or that they started with just like, generally speaking, do you support the A's moving to Las Vegas? And there was general support. And I think that that's accurate. I think there is general support of any new big sports team coming to Vegas at this point. People like that, generally speaking. Then they threw in, here are the good reasons for it. It doesn't require any new taxes, and it's going to generate $500 million worth of revenue and taxes in our community and all this good stuff. And then here's the opponent's view. And then they said we shouldn't be giving, you know, public money to a private billionaire who just lives in another state and wants to take all our money, and that money could go to better things. So they told the people that. So, I mean, that's fair. They just didn't frame it in a way that was clearly like the 800 people poll that the Nevada Independent commissioned, which was, are you for public financing or not? So they asked questions like, do you like that there might be an entertainment district? And people are like, yeah. Do you like that there might be a retractable roof? Yeah. Do you like that it might generate all this income? Yeah. You know, that sort of thing. What they didn't ask were like questions like, would you like any other team but the A's to come? Do the A's stink so bad that you will still support them? You know, stuff like that. You didn't get those poll questions.
Okay. So here's your bias, David. You just don't want the A's. It's so interesting.
Oh, well, I mean, they are the worst team possibly in the history of baseball. I'm just saying.
Well, I noticed that a popular Las Vegas anonymous Twitter account called out the Sun reporter for tweeting the survey results out uncritically. So, Michael, what responsibility do you think the media has when reporting on issues like these?
This actually goes back to the film tax credit, too, and all these things. I think there's this desire to get in on what's shiny, and then public reacts to that. We see what's shining. And I think we get a lot of criticism in the Nevada Current as like the Debbie Downers of the town because of the way that we report on things. But what we are trying to do applies to this ACE poll, applies to film tax credit, is just take a step backwards and look at the overall big picture of what this would actually mean for the community, what this would mean for economic development, what this would mean for our social safety net, housing, every little aspect, what this could actually mean if we brought these things to our town and used subsidies to bring these things to our towns. And so I agree there should be more critical analysis. Maybe we could write about the poll, but take a step back and saying like, this is what the poll is. And like, we're still assessing what this big picture, like we have to be honest about the big picture. A lot of times there aren't many adults in the room taking a step back because everyone wants something shiny and new and big. And journalists have to be the adult in the room, whether people like us or not for it, and just ask critical questions about the bigger picture beyond of like what is being told to us and what is being sold to us.
Ooh, I like that. I know you didn't coin that, but that was so great. That's just the best way. What's being told to us versus what's sold to us is the Nevada way, right? Yeah. And we don't ever ask that question.
So let's travel. We're going to travel to the next topic. So the Las Vegas airport is testing out a new facial recognition technology, and it's literally it's the future. So let's talk about it. So TSA sees 2.4 million passengers daily. So that's a group of people. And if you've ever stood in a line to wait to be seen and you pull out your stuff, take off your shoes, get through the lines, it's a whole entire process made much slower as a result of all the new elements of security. Retired TSA official Keith Jeffries said that the pandemic really accelerated the creation and implementation of this program, in which essentially people would take out their own IDs, place it on the scanner, get their face scanned, and then once their face is scanned, the TSA agent would confirm what the machine confirms, and then you'd be able to go through. And it's supposed to speed up the process. TSA says that they delete your biometric data after 24 months. The camera only turns on when a person puts their ID card on the little scanner, so it's not randomly gathering images at the airport. And it says that they're, you know, they're giving people the option. People can opt out of having their biometric data scanned in. Other critics are saying that, okay, but if you opt out, doesn't that make you feel like, oh, the federal government's now going to put you on a list? That's like, oh, Vogue refuses to comply. Vogue doesn't want us to scan. Like, Vogue, why don't you? If you haven't committed any crimes, why don't you want your information on file? And it's like, because it's my information. And a lot of people are saying that it's a stressful and an anxiety-ridden time. Like, I tend to have a bit of anxiety at the airport. And the other really big part of why people are opposed to this is that the facial recognition stuff can't tell one person of color from the other sometimes, just to keep it per usual. So basically, unless they have the good technology, the systems will not scan faces properly, and it won't be able to actually distinctively tell who is who. And they probably need some more people of color working in those departments to help with the facial recognition software. So those are kind of the pros and the cons as I've kind of did my little notes, but I'm curious for y'all because I have so many feelings. But Michael, do you have any concerns with your biometric data being used at the airport? Like, would you opt in or opt out?
It's funny. I believe I actually did that on a recent trip and I didn't even think about it.
I'm already in, baby.
I did not even think about it, but now, like, I have anxiety. Thanks, Vogue.
I'm sorry.
For my next upcoming trip. I just didn't even think about it. I feel like I always have, like, stress and anxiety when I, in general, of, like, am I get through this gate in time? If, like, even though, like, I get there super early, like, still this anxiety in general. And so when I, by the time I'm handing, stepping up to TSA, like, I'm not even thinking about privacy issues with, like, my biometric scans, but now I sure am, so thank you. I do get the concerns about data collection and privacy violations, and then, like, that's a whole thing around AI in general. Like, it's been terrible with, like, detecting skin tones, even though I am, like, a lighter skin black dude. Like, sometimes I see that happen, like, in certain readings whenever I'm, like, using the automatic faucet, and so this is going to be give me a lot to think about. Now I have more anxiety. I've already done it. So should I just keep doing this now? That's my question for you. Because now, like, if I'd known this beforehand, I probably would at least consider opting out because of the data privacy concerns.
And I feel like if something is hacked, like if a human being created it, then a human being can hack it. And even there's certain password protection programs that people can still hack into. And so it's just like, I guess we're really never safe. But David, what are your thoughts on this?
Facial recognition technology doesn't have the best reputation. Besides some of the racial biases that were just mentioned, it sometimes just gets the wrong people. And, you know, what are they looking for? That's the better question. Like, are they looking for international terrorists? Or are they looking for people who have skipped out on markers at the Las Vegas casino and now they found them? You know, are they looking for people who've committed crimes in other states?
You just went way down the street around the corner, David. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what they're looking for. I mean, we just consider it. It's like, oh, it's just a safety measure. You know, slowly but surely, the creep of safety over just living our friggin' lives has really taken hold since, you know, the unfortunate events of 9/11. And there's been a lot of misuse of government authority since that time in ways that have nothing to do with safety or terrorism, but have everything to do with fueling the carceral machines and targeting people who may not be a threat to you on your airplane. Okay. And so
targeting black, brown people. Let's clarify that.
Let's say it. So, you know, when we're making it easier for the government to invade people's lives, I'm wondering about the Fourth Amendment. I'm wondering about, you know, those protections that are supposed to be in place so that we aren't harassed or put into the system because technology says this is important for your safety. Everything is important for our safety, but there's a balance and there's challenges. And the misuse of that runs high always. So am I against it? Yeah, 100%. Am I going to opt out? I'm like you, Vogue. I don't want to be like high grass on that one. Like, you know, put me down with the rest of the little ants. We'll follow the leader. I don't want to stand Aww. Out in any way. So
I mean, it's a worry.
It is a worry.
But I don't think it's, you know. Here's the thing, y'all. Like, my inner Ron Swanson, my inner like iRobot worries and Toy Story and like I don't like Siri and Alexa listening to all my business. All of that part of me is screaming. But this also feels like the new normal because at the same time, I take pictures of my nieces and Google at a certain point will be like, hey, girl, look, we made you an album of you and your nieces together and titled it Girls Day Out. And I was like, oh, this is great. I could probably post this on my Insta.
And hey, would you like to buy the following products, which we know your niece likes?
Right. And we'll make you a photo album. And I'm like, I do want a photo album of my nieces. And also, why do you know their faces? Like, they were like, do you want to name them? Like, I name them. I don't name my nieces in the programs. I labeled my grandma old lady because that's my old lady. But like, I will not name myself and it'll compare and contrast multiple photos of me with myself in different years and go, is this the same person? And I was like, none of your business, Google.
Hey, I heard you. I saw that you Googled allergy medications. Here's some ads on all your Instagram feeds, Facebook feed, and Twitter feeds.
But sometimes it gives you coupons and then it's like, thanks. But also, what the?
But at what cost?
A lower cost.
So if you're listening to this right now, CityCast is offering flip phones. Flip phones when you don't need to be as smart as you think you do.
You can't hack a typewriter. That's a Ron Swanson quote.
You can't hack a typewriter. I love that.
You show Kate, okay? Ain't nobody stealing my manuscript.
I'm just over it. When someone says something is for our security or for our children, it's immediately sus to me. I just can't take it. You know, the Patriot Act, which was designed to, like, defeat terrorism, its first use was against government corruption involving San Diego and tangentially Las Vegas. So, you know, they were eavesdropping in people's cars under the Patriot Act, which is still in place, by the way, and still being used for things that have absolutely nothing to do with terrorism. So I'm just biometrics, all this data. We're beyond the slippery path. We're beyond the slippery slope. We're into the slippery quicksand of destroying ourselves.
Quicksand's not slippery.
Here you go, Las Vegas. Here's some anxiety to start your weekend.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm curious, though, because I know where I've been seeing my biometric data being used, but where else are y'all seeing biometric data being used for security or for just other random purposes?
What are some examples? What do we think the answer is?
I mean, technically, if you are using your thumbprint to open up your Mac, if you are letting your iPhone scan your face in order to open up, technically, Alexa has learned your voice. I was like, David, I will take you all the way down all the ways that information is just in the air.
The iPhone knows my eyeballs.
Okay. I will admit, I've been swept away by technology and, like, the convenience of it, of the thumbprint, of the fingerprint, of the face recognition. Like, it is the future, but it does bring the question, like, the future is coming at us fast, and we're not having enough conversation about the constitutionality of this future, too. It's David's point.
Well, and the deep fakes and all that stuff, you know, what can we trust anymore? And it's really hard. And the more data, whether it's bio data or personal data that's out there, the more likely that you're going to have identity theft, that people are going to make things that seem to be you but aren't you, right? I mean, that's just the nature of the beast. But it's easy to sell. In other words, what are we being told versus what are we being sold? That's my thing all day today. But we're being sold on something that is important for our safety or whatever. Mm. What we're not being told is how this information could be used in ways that are contrary to our safety.
Mm. And you know what? Like, airport security at Harry Reid isn't the fastest. So if this sped up the process, would y'all be down?
Oh, yeah. 100%. Take it all. Take my blood.
Wow.
Convenience.
All that, David, for you to turn around. And that's the thing. Most of the technology that we have was created for our convenience. To just make our lives.
Are you willing to do anything in the world to get through the airport faster? Yes.
Wow. Well, I'm glad to know where you're at, David. Bless your heart.
That's polling versus reality.
They already have me. They know who I am.
They also already know who I am. I haven't had my face scanned, but they have my ID, and I just got pre-check and ain't gone nowhere. All right. Michael and David, thank you so much for this conversation. I have a lot of things to think about, and I am looking forward to actually doing some more research and checking out April Corbin Gurnas's article.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm going to say it was fun. I'm going to say it was a treat, Vogue.
This was a treat.
That's all for today here on CityCast Las Vegas. Our producers this week were Sonia Cho Swanson, Layla Muhammad, and Lizzie Goldsmith. Our newsletter editor is Scott Dickensheets, and our hosts are David Figler and me, Vogue Robinson. Music is by OG Moose, All the Kimonos, and Epidemic Sound. We record this show on the traditional homelands of the new movie, the Southern Paiute people. If you enjoyed the show, go ahead and tell a friend, rate the show, leave us a review, and subscribe to our morning newsletter. We'll be back Monday morning with more news from around the city. Take care.
You just like got onto me about like Five Nights at Freddy's, and then you're like Paul Blart. Like, seriously.
Now you see me. Now you know who I am.
Right, for sure.
I mean, I love Showgirls too, so I'm an outlier.
We're talking to.